Now let's meet the candidates for House District 17, Republican C.N. Stevens and Democrat Garen Tarr. We'll open with Ms. Stevens, your one-minute opening statement.
First of all, I'd like to thank KAKM for this opportunity to connect with our voters. I'm C.N. Stevens, and I'm running for State House of District 17, which is all of Mountain View, Airport Heights, and a little bit of Russian Jack. I've lived in Mountain View for 22 years and in Alaska for 42 years. I own and operate two small businesses with my husband, Randy. As a business owner, I have direct experience with the practical issues of knowing when to spend, when to save, and knowing the difference between wants and needs.
Okay, Garen Tarr, 1 minute, please.
I'm Garen Tarr, candidate for State House District 17. I'm running because I want to make a positive difference, and I believe I can make a positive difference. A hello to folks in 17, and thank you for listening. I bring experience, effectiveness, and energy to this position. As a former legislative staffer, I can hit the ground running and make sure my neighbors have excellent representation. I bring business and management experience. I'm a dedicated community volunteer and a hard worker. I believe my neighbors know they can count on me to work hard for them in Juneau. I've been having a great time going door to door. At this late date, time and time again, I've been told I'm the only one who's come by their door. I believe it's essential that you spend time talking with your neighbors if you're going to represent them. I wish I had an hour to talk about all the wonderful people I've met. Hundreds are hosting yard signs, dozens are volunteering. We've registered over 50 new voters, and I'm thrilled to bring new people into the process. It's been an incredible experience, and I hope this is just the beginning of us getting to know each other.
Thank you, Garen Tarr.
And working together.
Okay, let's go to Daisha Eden for the first question.
This is for Mrs. Stevens. What's the difference between you and Ms. Tarr?
I think mostly the difference is I have a business background. I've been in business for over 12 years now. I own two businesses, like I said. And I think I bring that experience. I'm going to bring that experience to Juneau, whereas my opponent is mostly a volunteer and has done lots of volunteer work, which is great. But I think in Juneau, we need someone who is more of a citizen legislator and will use their business experience to help in Juneau.
Ms. Tarr.
Same question?
Just
30-second comment.
A response.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I wish I could just be a full-time volunteer, but of course I have to work to earn a living like everyone else in my area. And I bring business experience. I, much like her, her background is a bartender and stained glass, and those sound like really fun, exciting jobs. I bring business experience. I've been working for myself at various points, and I bring business experience managing multi-million dollar projects through public-private partnership, and I think that's more relevant for this position.
Let's go to Kyle Hopkins.
Let's talk about this. This question is for Ms. Tarr. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Mountain View. Mm-hmm. How do you reduce crime and raise incomes in that neighborhood?
It's a great question. I've had a good time going door to door, and public safety has come up time and time again as a primary concern. And so I've really been soliciting information from neighbors about how they think we could do a better job. I've met with all of our public employees, the police department, the state troopers, the firefighters to learn a little bit more. I think one of the things we need to do is gather information and find out what kind of things people are experiencing, things from drug situations to violence in the streets. And so we need to gather the information. Then we need to take the steps to have the appropriate number of personnel to address those issues. And right now, we know, although this is a municipal issue, that we're chronically understaffed at the Anchorage Police Department. And so I think we need to have that conversation first, and then we'll figure out the solutions.
Ms. Stevens, a 30-second comment on what you just heard.
I think we need to have a better relationship with our police department. The things, the relationship between the Anchorage Police Department and Mountain View residents is very strained right now because of things that have happened in the past mm-hmm. 3 or 4 months. And I think that we need to have the police come into the schools and have programs where the kids aren't afraid of the police, where there's a better working relationship with the police department. I'm not sure that everything has to do with funding, more funding and more funding.
Daisha Eaton, next question.
This is for Ms. Tarr. Sharon Cisna served in this former district for around a decade. Mm-hmm. What would you do differently than Ms. Cisna if you were elected?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Representative Cisna did a great job, and she represented the Airport Heights portion of the district, not the Russian Jack and Mountain View. A primary concern for her was building up the UMed district, because at that time the district included the university and medical area, which is an economic engine for our area. Now that that's moved out of the district, I wouldn't have that as a primary priority. Instead, I've identified my top three priorities as jobs, education, and public safety.
Ms. Stevens, 30 seconds on what you just heard.
When I'm going door to door, what I'm hearing is that the people of the district don't feel like they were taken care of by Sharon Cisna. There's a lot of, actually, not just Sharon Cisna, but Max Gruenberg also, because Mountain View, he was in charge of that. There's a lot of frustration that things were not done, were not taken care of, that the UMed district was actually the prime focus of everything, and everything else was neglected.
Kyle Hopkins.
This question's for Ms. Stevens. On Election Day, voters will be asked whether there ought to be a constitutional convention. My question is, do you believe the Constitution should be amended along the lines of, say, legalizing gay marriage or allowing the state to fund private faith-based schools?
I'm kind of torn on whether or not we should have a constitutional, whether or not we should be allowed to do that. On one hand, I think that we should, and I think that the people are smart enough to make that decision, but on the other hand, also, it opens up a can of worms about what can be changed and what can't be changed. I think that the voters have already made their decision on is respectful to gay marriage, and I don't know that, you know, changing the Constitution would be that great of an idea.
Garantar, 30 seconds.
Thank you. Well, I think we have a model constitution, and in fact, in countries around the world, they've looked to our constitution for some of the strong provisions, the Equal Protection Clause, the strong right to privacy. And so I've been proud to be an Alaskan who lives with that as the constitution, and I think that at this time, a constitutional convention is not appropriate.
Okay, let's go to Daisha Eaton for Garantar.
Ms. Tarr, recently Anchorage Superior Court Judge John Suddick upheld a law requiring parents to be notified before girls 17 and under have an abortion. Mm-hmm. Do you agree or disagree with that ruling?
I can speak to personal experience. I am a person who grew up in an abusive household and unfortunately was forced to go to the courts to leave that abusive household. And as a person who experienced that, I don't agree with forcing teenage girls to go in front of a judge to defend themselves, particularly when they come out of an abusive situation. For me, that was a life-changing event and not in a positive way. I spoke out during the parental consent debate. I hoped that folks would think critically about this issue, and I think, unfortunately, the unintended consequence is that girls that are in really vulnerable situations are put even more at risk. I would hope that we can work together to do things that actually improve the lives of those girls.
CN Stevens, 30 seconds.
I'm glad they upheld the law. Personally, I think that it's a parent's right to know what their child is doing. I think that a 17-year-old should not be making the decision on whether or not they should be having an abortion. I think that it's, you know, if I had children, which I've been trying for 6 years now, but I would just be mortified to think that I didn't have the kind of relationship with my daughter where we could talk about that and make the decision together.
Garantar, 30 seconds on what you heard.
Well, of course, I agree with that, and I wish that all children lived in families where they had good communication and open communication. And as I spoke of a moment ago, I come from a situation where I know that's not always the case. And what we know in Alaska is we lead the nation in rates of domestic violence and sexual assault, and we know many children are growing up in difficult family situations. And so
let's wrap it up there. Let's go to the final question for Kyle Hopkins.
I'm going to follow up on, you mentioned the state and its high rates of domestic violence. That's a priority for the governor. Mm-hmm. This question is for Ms. Stevens. What specifically would you propose should be done to reduce domestic violence in Alaska?
Ooh. I think that, again, has to do with education. I think that we should start teaching kids when they're in junior high that we should have some kind of a program where they, you know, learn how to interact with even, a lot of kids don't even know how to interact with the opposite sex. I think that we should have programs where they can learn the correct way to deal with each other, to interact with each other, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. You could include the family in the programs and just try to get more education on what's right and what's wrong and, you know, do that.
Ms. Tarr, 30 seconds.
Thank you. Well, I would agree that education is key, and unfortunately, it's Ms. Stevens and her party who have been obstructionists in making that happen in our public schools. So we've tried to move forward on that, and some local organizations like in Sitka, the Sitkins Against Violence, have created a very new program that they're able to have in the schools with local support. I'd like to see that kind of thing happening statewide.
Okay, now we go to the candidates who will have 30 seconds or 15 seconds to ask questions of one another. The person who receives the question will have 45 seconds to respond, and then the question asker will have 15 seconds to comment on what they've heard. Ms. Stevens.
I get to ask the first question?
Yeah.
Garen, you've repeatedly talked about that you want to raise the student base allocation. Mm-hmm. Exactly how high do you want to raise it? We just poured money. All five of our schools are failing. I think you know that. We've poured money at Clark Junior High School. The whole school is completely rebuilt. It's still failing. What's your number? What's the number that you want to raise it to that you think it's going to help?
Well, that's a great question because education is a top concern. And I wouldn't say that we've been throwing money at things. In fact, we've been making investments in our future, and our children are our future. Last year, there was a bill in the Senate to increase the student base allocation, and I agreed with that effort to increase the student base allocation. I'm a person who has classroom experience. I've been teaching for over 14 years at the university and in our public schools. I know the difficult job that our teachers face every day in educating our youth at all levels, and I know that investments can have great results. I believe we need to be listening to the teachers, and they have the good ideas, and it's a good idea to invest in our young people.
Ms. Stevens, 15 seconds.
I think it's a great idea to invest in young people, but I think that we've been investing, and throwing money at a problem that is continuing to stay the same. You can't keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results like you've heard before.
Thank you. We'll have to leave it there. Ms. Tarr.
Thank you. What value do you think community councils have in our neighborhood?
I think that community councils serve a purpose, but my experience with community councils is that it doesn't really speak for the whole of the community, which is in part the community's fault because not a lot of people go to the community council meetings. But in my experience, a lot of the things that get passed at community council meetings are not necessarily what the views or what the community wants.
Your entire 15 seconds.
Well, I'm surprised to hear that because she's attended just one community council in total and hasn't attended any community councils in Russian Jack or in Airport Heights. And it's your most local form of government. This is where good ideas come from. This is where the citizens know what's happening.
Okay. It's your opportunity to ask another question, Ms. Mm-hmm. Tarr.
I see from the Conservative Alaska Family Council questionnaire you don't support an increase in Denali KidCare. Many of our neighbors, some working two jobs to get by, rely on Denali KidCare for their kids. Do you believe only wealthy people should enjoy the joys of parenting?
First of all, I don't recall ever saying that. The only thing, I'm all for funding Denali KidCare. The only thing that I'm not for is the public paying for abortions. Even though I'm pro-choice, I still don't think that we as taxpayers should have to pay for abortions. So I don't know when I supposedly answered like that.
Ms. Tarr, 15 seconds.
Well, it's in the Alaska Family Action Voters Guide where she didn't support abortion in the cases of rape or incest, and she also didn't support Denali KidCare increases. And this is in complete contrast to what she says in her election pamphlet that she believes in the Constitution.
Ms. Stevens, your question.
Let's see. In a strongly contested primary with Cal Williams, you made it a point to say you wanted to run a clean campaign, and 2 days later, you personally attacked Cal Williams' character. What exactly is your definition of a clean campaign?
45 seconds.
Thank you. Well, the primary is over now, and Cal and I are friends, and we've spoke, and that's not what happened. And if you feel comfortable trying to mischaracterize what happened, that's your prerogative. I would say that's a reflection of the content of your character, not mine.
Ms. Stevens, 15 seconds.
To rebut that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that everyone that watched your last debate knows the truth in that, and everyone that got the flyer the last week before the election also knows the truth in that.
Garen Tarr, your last question in this segment.
Sure. So it's clear that we need more oil in the pipeline, and you've stated that you support the $2 billion giveaway. And so I wonder if you could compare ELF, ACES, and progressivity models for oil taxes and how you would get more oil in the pipeline.
Well, I don't know that I can compare them. I think that everyone knows that one-third of our economy comes from oil, and I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with everything that has to do with ACES. I just know as a business owner that you have to have incentives to get people to want to use your business, and that we have to do something. We absolutely have to do something, whether it's in between, you know, giving them all the discounts that they want and all the tax breaks. We have to do something. We can't just keep continuing the way that we are. The decline is too much.
Ms. Tarr, 15 seconds.
Thank you. Well, I'm sorry that she's not more well-informed on this issue, because it's a primary issue and probably will be the first thing we work on when we go down to Juneau. And actually, the oil and gas industry is responsible for more like 80 to 90% of our state's economy. So it should be a primary concern.
C.N. Stevens, your final question in this round.
I'm just wondering if you've ever had to make a payroll, and if you've ever had to look any of your employees in the eye and tell them that you have to fire them because you don't have enough work for them.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And in her experience, I think she has one employee. And I've worked with many people on projects, and when the projects didn't come through, we had to make a decision to make changes. We worked collaboratively in the private business sector. That, in my experience, it was a collaborative effort. And so I know there are tough decisions that need to be made. I'm proud, though, to say that most of my efforts have been successful. And so with good planning and good business practice, we've been successful and haven't really had to have those unfortunate times.
Let's go to Ms. Stevens. Ms. Stevens, 15 seconds.
I just think that my business experience is going to be a lot better in Juneau than someone who's been a legislative staffer and is going to be in the minority. I think I can get a lot more done in Juneau.
Let's go to our reporter question, starting with Daisha Eaton.
This is for Ms. Tarr, and Mrs. Stevens pointed out that you were a legislative staffer. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious how you see working in the legislature. Do you see it as a career?
Well, I enjoy working on public policy. I have a master's degree in public administration, and I've completed the coursework in finishing up that. And I believe that it takes educated people, experienced people, to make good decisions. I think it's a very appropriate background for moving forward to be a legislator. I've always had a career of public service. I'm very motivated to do community work, and I've done it in a variety of ways, from serving on the Anchorage Women's Commission to serving on the board of many service organizations. So I think public service broadly is an admirable profession, and it's something that I will continue to do throughout my entire career.
C.N. Stevens, 30 seconds.
I think that being a staffer is great, and but if you make a mistake when you're a staffer, you just send another email. If I make a mistake in my business, somebody could lose their job, or I could lose a contract. So I think that I have the experience that you need in Juneau to make a difference.
Thank you. Kyle Hopkins.
This question is for Ms. Stevens. In your opening statements, you talked about the difference between wants and needs in terms of budget making. What are some programs or spending items that you would specifically cut if or seek to cut in the legislature?
I'm not sure that there's anything specific that I would cut, but there are things that we could do to cut, you know, to cut the budget. There's attrition, the people that are phasing out and retiring. We could, you know, not fill those positions. We need to cut the inefficiencies. I think people have mentioned that before in our government. And I think now is a crucial time for us to step up and make some changes.
Garen Tarr, 30 seconds.
Thank you. I'm surprised to hear, with her lack of experience, that she would be so critical of the public employees. I have worked with them. When you are a legislative staffer, one of the things you do is work with all of the departments. You know how hard they're working, and I commend them for their dedication to being good state employees and working hard to have efficiency in government, and I think they are.
Next question is Daisha Eaton's.
This is for Mrs. Stevens. Each week, soldiers are coming home to Alaska, many right now, and some suffer from PTSD, others are disabled, and a number of them take their own lives. What, if anything, should we be doing that we're not for our veterans?
I think there's a lot we could be doing. I also, at one of my fundraisers, I spoke with a wife whose husband is over in Afghanistan right now, and there are soldiers who are committing suicide is a very big problem, but also what nobody talks about is the family members that are committing suicide. There is a huge number of wives, children that are actually committing suicide, and no one's talking about it. I think we need to support our soldiers 100%. We need to support the VA, and that's what I believe.
Let's go to Garen Tarr.
Thank you. Well, if any veterans are listening or active military, first, thank you so much for your service to our country. I have family members who have served and am proud of that service. I have the experience of working with military families, and I've seen the kids who are struggling because their family members have been deployed, sometimes multiple deployments. So one area I think where we could really do a good job is with the programs in the schools to help support those families and provide a little bit of extra comfort and letting them know that their community supports them 100%. And then with healthcare, we should be doing a better job. Of course, a lot of that is a federal responsibility, but I would be looking for ways that the state could complement those federal programs.
Thank you. Back to Kyle Hopkins.
This question is for Ms. Tarr. You referenced a $2 billion giveaway in one of your earlier statements. What's the path that you think the state should take regarding oil taxes?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Great question. This is going to be a top concern, and we know that something's going to happen with ACES. The conversation started. Unfortunately, they ran out of time last year to really complete the work. But I believe we'll keep the ACES infrastructure. It's providing for, you know, high revenue to the state, which is something that we need. And what we'll need to look at is how we incentivize new development, need to consider incentivizing in existing fields, and then also take a look at the progressivity so that the return for the oil companies is higher when the price of oil is higher.
CN Stevens, 30 seconds on what you heard.
No Alaskan wants to reduce oil taxes just to have our, you know, money be taken out of our state. I believe that Alaska could benefit from a tax break if the competition keeps, you know, the investment here. And I don't have a problem sitting at a table and being in on that discussion.
Okay. Now we'll have a segment in which the reporters will ask the same question of both of you, and each of you will have 30 seconds to respond. Daisha Eaton, the first question, please.
You were both just talking about oil taxes. So how would you have voted, Mrs. Stevens, on the governor's oil tax bill?
Would I voted for it or against it? I guess if I had to choose now, I would say that I would have voted for it.
Okay. Ms. Tarr.
For the reason stated that it would be a giveaway with no strings attached, I would have voted against it.
Okay. Kyle Hopkins.
We all recently got our permanent fund dividend checks. Do you foresee a future for the permanent fund where it's not used just to give Alaskans checks, but it could be used to help pay for state government?
I think it should stay the way that it is. I don't think it should be used for anything other than what it's being used for. And I hope that it's around for a really long time, but if we don't do some changes with our budget concerns and with the oil declining, then I think that it's going to be scary and we're going to have to, you know, look at some other options.
Ms. Tarr.
Thank you. Well, I don't think there's much support in the public for spending the permanent fund on government services. I know there are some individuals in the business community that would like to see us move to a different management regime for it, the percent of market value, POMV, which is a little more stable so that you wouldn't have the fluctuation like we do now with the five-year rolling average in terms of how much the PFD check is. But the PFD is very important for the families in our area, working-class families. I support it.
We have time for one more question. Kyle Hopkins, you have another one in your bag there you'd like to ask these candidates?
Well, I was listening to the candidates talk about oil taxes. I guess I'd like to just ask as plainly as I can if how do we get a gas line? If we don't give the oil companies a big tax break, if politically that's not possible, what's the path to getting a gas line in our lifetimes?
And Stevens will go first.
We've been trying to do this for years and years and years. We've got to get a gas line. It is imperative. It's for our energy costs and everything else. I don't know how we're going to do it, but I know that we're a lot closer now than we've ever been before. And I think that the people just need to demand it. I mean, we need to. It has to be a priority.
Ms. Tarr.
Thank you. Well, it is our economic future and will bring good-paying mm-hmm. jobs for decades to come and affordable energy. So it's kind of a two-for-one. And I think there are a couple things we need to consider, the context in which this gas line happens. I've been meeting with different economists and attending some of the chamber luncheons, trying to get up to speed and gather as much information. The proposed Susitna-Wantana Dam could change the cost of electricity, which would create a different environment here in the state. So there's kind of with the dam, without the dam kind of options. Then there's small diameter, medium diameter, large diameter lines. All of those need to be evaluated, take advantage of the world market.
Let's go to our closing statements. First, C.N. Stevens, 1 minute.
As I've stated, I am not a career politician. I'm a business owner, hardworking, who just wants to help my district. I'm running because I want to, not because I have to. My opponent is running because she has to. Being a politician defines who she is. I guess I'm old-fashioned in my thinking. When something used to happen in your town, neighbors would help neighbors, churches would help families. You have to, not rely on the government to come help or bail you out. I can easily sum up the difference between my opponent and I. Last month, we had devastating windstorms. I gathered my family and my crews, and we spent 3 days with chainsaws clearing the trees from houses and cars of my neighbors. My opponent organized a safety meeting for 3 weeks later. I would be honored to have your vote on November 6th, and I hope you'll vote for me, C.N. Stevens. Thank you.
Garen Tarr, 1 minute closing statement.
Thank you. Thank you to my neighbors in District 17 and the hundreds of friends and neighbors who have supported the Tarr for Statehouse campaign. We've run a positive, people-first campaign. In supporting me, you get the best of both worlds, someone who brings new energy and new ideas, and at the same time is experienced in management, business, and public policy. I'm a dedicated community volunteer. I believe in the people of our area. I know the struggles they have are real, and I want to help them. I want to represent the people who can't afford a lobbyist. I've been saying that I'm hardworking and effective. My record speaks to my effectiveness, and I think I've shown what a hard worker I am. I've attended every community council meeting, special community events, hosted coffees and listening sessions, and I've knocked on over 5,000 doors as I've been through our neighborhoods multiple times. You can count on me to be available, to listen, and to keep in touch. It's your government, and we work for the people. I won't forget that. I'm Garen Tarr, and I'd appreciate your support on November 6th.
Thank you, Ms. Stevens and Ms. Tarr. Next on Running, we'll hear from the candidates from House District 18. Stay right with us.
Hi, I'm Daisha Eaton, KSKA's South Central reporter. On election night, I'll be reporting from the Denina Center, covering the South Central races. With 59 of 60 seats up for grabs because of redistricting, this is a high-stakes election year. Will the 10-10 split in the Senate be upset? Will the bipartisan coalition survive the election or be cast aside? Whoever wins the South Central races will help determine how Alaska moves forward. Tune in to KSKA Anchorage on Tuesday night, November 6th, for APRN's special election night coverage.
Join KSKA on election night. Tuesday, November 6th, NPR coverage continues at 7 p.m., and statewide coverage from the Alaska Public Radio Network begins at 9 p.m. You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage. Now here's Annie Feit to tell you about the ballot propositions.
There are two propositions on this year's election ballot. One asks voters whether the state should hold a convention to revise or amend the state constitution. It's required to be on the ballot every 10 years. The other is a bond proposition that would allow the state to borrow nearly $500 million for transportation-related projects around the state. The bond package was originally originally proposed by Governor Sean Parnell's administration, but the legislature ultimately crafted the package of 36 projects. Representative Bill Stoltz, a Republican from the Mat-Su Valley, did much of the work as co-chair of the House Finance Committee. He says bond propositions are a Democratic way to get infrastructure projects built.
Each time it's a different set of arguments to the electorate, and that's the beauty of the process. The voters have to embrace that as a good public policy idea. They have to embrace it as an appropriate expenditure and coming from the appropriate funding source. In this case, bond and indebtedness.
The bond proposition would fund port and harbor projects in Bristol Bay, Emonic, Haines, and other communities. Road construction projects would go forward in several places, including Anchorage, the Mat-Su Valley, and Sitka. Two of the most expensive items on the list are also the most controversial. $50 million would go to the Port of Anchorage expansion and $30 million to the Port Mackenzie rail extension. Bob Shavelson is with the advocacy group Cook Inlet Keeper. He says the ongoing Port of Anchorage project has been fraught with problems from the beginning and calls the rail extension a boondoggle.
Really, the bond measure is a poison pill, and it's forcing Alaskans to swallow spending tens of millions of dollars on these dubious projects, all in the interest of getting some more worthy work done around the state.
Mat-Su borough officials say the Port Mackenzie rail project will help produce nearly $1 billion a year in mineral development due to cheaper transportation costs. Anchorage city officials say the port expansion project is essential for the economy of the entire state. The state points out that it's a good time to borrow money for big projects. Alaska's debt manager guesses the state can borrow the money at an interest rate of less than 3%. The total amount of the bond package is about $453 million. Historically, voters in the state have approved transportation bond packages. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. You can find Monday through Friday night's schedule for Running on KSKA and Alaska Public Television at alaskapublic.org.
Now let's meet the candidates for House District 18. Chris Eichenlaub, the Republican, and Democrat Les Guerra. Mr. Eichenlaub, you'll have the opening statement of 1 minute, please.
Thank you. My name is Chris Eichenlaub, Jr. I'm running for State House in District 18. This is downtown Anchorage. I'm a network administrator by profession. I work in information technology and computer systems. I'm looking to help defend civil liberties. I'm really concerned about the overreach of federal authority into states' rights, and I would like to stick up for the individual citizen.
Les Guerra, 1 minute, please.
Thank you. I believe in working for your interests over special interests. That's why I believe in creating opportunity for all people, whether you're born with privilege or not. I voted for financial aid for people who can't afford college or job training because I believe everybody deserves opportunity. I've worked to fix our foster care system, and I'm going to keep doing that so every foster child in the state has a chance for opportunity in this state. The governor's $2 billion proposed oil tax giveaway is a great concern to me. It's going to be an economic disaster. It's written to let oil companies take that $2 billion in our revenue and spend it outside Alaska in places like Libya and Iraq. It would decimate jobs. Losing $2 billion will kill police jobs, firefighter jobs, teacher jobs. And I proposed instead that any tax breaks be tied to investment in Alaska because I think it would be a disaster to allow companies the option to take that money outside of Alaska. And just as a brief comment, we don't just represent downtown in this district. We represent Fairview, Government Hill, and Eastridge as well.
Okay, we'll have to stop there and go to our reporter questions, starting with Daisha Eaton.
This is a question for Mr. Eichenlaub. You say in your statement to the voters that individual liberty is threatened here in Alaska more than ever before. What exactly do you mean by that?
And you have 45 seconds here.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for the question, Daisha. Something I'm very concerned about is a lot of the new laws and federal overreach that has occurred since the 9/11 attacks. We've seen the Patriot Act, we've seen the NDAA, we've even seen cybersecurity legislation that's far overreaching. It's not just for fighting terrorism, it's also for a police state against the individual citizens here in America. And I believe that these laws are abused. Another example of this would be TSA security at the airports. TSA is definitely far more intrusive than they need to be, and it's a direct violation of our rights to privacy. I believe that we need to introduce legislation at the state level to affirm those rights and prevent that type of intrusions from happening.
Les Gareth, 30 seconds on what you've heard.
I don't disagree with Chris on those dangers from the federal government. I've signed resolutions against the Patriot Act, against the TSA abuses, but the truth is on the state level, you can send letters to a Missouri senator or a Missouri congressman and they're going to throw it in the trash. I mean, if you really want to affect federal policy, I think you should work for a candidate you believe on the federal level or run for federal office. We can keep sending letters from the state level, but the truth is the folks from other states aren't all that interested in them. The best way to do that is at the federal level if you want to work on federal issues.
Kyle Hopkins, your question.
This question is for Mr. Guerra. One question that will be for that likely will be before the state legislature next year that speaks to a national issue is the Stand Your Ground laws. There will be an effort to kind of expand Alaska's Stand Your Ground laws and allow people to, to essentially shoot someone who they perceive to be a threat. What are your views on the existing Stand Your Ground laws, and would you?
I believe everybody has a right to self-defense. You know, if you're in danger of your life or a serious injury, you have a right to self-defense. But in the Trayvon Martin case, for example, you can't write a law that lets you chase somebody who's been no threat to you and then all of a sudden get into an altercation with them and then have a right to shoot them. I mean, you've actually created that crime. And some of the language and some of the Stand Your Ground laws lets you do that. You've got no crime going on, you create a crime, and then you're allowed to shoot somebody. That is a problem to me. So I believe in self-defense. I don't believe in letting yourself create a crime.
Mr. Eichenlaub, 30 seconds.
Yes, self-defense is very important. It's one of the most critical purposes for the Second Amendment is the individual responsibility to protect themselves. In the Supreme Court decision of Warren versus the District of Columbia, it was ruled that cops are under no obligation to protect the individual citizen. Therefore, the individual citizen has to have legal grounds for defending themselves in public.
Thank you. Back to Desheen.
This is for Mr. Guerra, and as I'm sure you know, Fire Island just started up, and just wondering if you feel there's hope for other such renewable energy projects in this region.
Yeah, this state has to diversify its energy base. Natural gas is important. Oil is important. But renewable energy is very important. I've been a co-sponsor of the Renewable Energy Fund. I actually got an extra $25 million put into that fund with Lyman Hoffman a number of years ago. The governor's whittled that down by vetoing money for the Renewable Energy Fund, which I think is a backwards move. The mayor has hampered that Fire Island project by forbidding the city from buying into it. So we have half the wind generators that we need on that island. It's made it less efficient than it should have been. But over the long term, the price of wind power stays relatively constant as the price of natural gas goes up. You want to have low-cost wind power because it doesn't get more expensive over the long term. But the mayor made it more expensive by not buying into the project and keeping the economies of scale worse than they should have been.
Mr. Eichenlaub, 30 seconds.
Yes, I believe that the free market should decide the price of energy. I believe some of these renewable energy projects are misapplied. The Fire Island project, for example, has a higher cost to produce the energy than what would be produced by natural gas. This becomes really important in the future because if the state is to develop an LNG plan and project, we could be competing against our own energy prices. This would possibly create a handout for our exporters where we're going to be selling the resource that we could have been using locally and benefiting Alaskans with cheaper energy costs.
Kyle Hopkins.
This question is also from Mr. Eichenlaub. You say it's time to cut non-essential services from state spending. Name two that you would cut.
I would cut health care, and I would also cut the power cost. I'm sorry, not health care, but I would cut education and power cost equalization program. I believe that that particular program has a lot to do with our previous question that when the state gets involved with making the price of energy cheaper, this subsidy actually hurts the free market's ability to solve its problems.
Let's get our 30 seconds on what you've heard.
You know, the free market causes $9 a gallon diesel fuel in rural Alaska, where people don't make very much money. Power cost equalization is a way of us saying we're going to help people in rural Alaska deal with $1,000 a month heating bills. So eliminating power cost equalization, you know, I represent Anchorage, but I represent the state. And I can't let communities that are already strapped have to have individuals who have $1,000 a month heating bills. So I disagree with Mr. Eichenlaub about that. And cutting education, I believe educational opportunity is the great equalizer in this world.
Okay. Daisha Eaton for Les Guerra.
You have personal experience with the foster care system, and you've talked about it numerous times. How is the state of Alaska's foster care system doing, and what would you do from Juneau to improve it?
Well, I've done a lot to try and improve it. We've started a mentorship program for foster youth coming out of foster care so they have a responsible adult to rely on. I've started a laptop program to get laptops to foster youth so they can succeed in school. We've allowed foster youth to stay in till age 21, which is a national movement, and now Alaska has joined that. I believe we have too few social workers. So what happens is foster parents don't get calls back from the social workers, and they quit being foster parents. We lose our best foster parents. There are a lot of things that we can keep doing. There are a lot of things that I've done that are very low cost that involve volunteers, volunteer mentors, donated laptops. So it's not always about spending money, but we need to do better. We've increased the amount of money that we've given for college financial aid and job training so foster youth can succeed. It's all about creating opportunity for people.
Chris Eichenlaub, 30 seconds.
Like I said, I believe in general that the government is currently spending way too much with our current budget levels, and I think some of this needs to be reined in before we can be applying money and dollars to these services that are just non-essential and not necessarily the role of the state government.
Okay, Kyle Hopkins, last question in this segment.
This question is for Mr. Eichenlaub, and I'll just follow up on what you've been talking about. My question is two parts. Do you consider yourself to be a member of the Tea Party? And if so, how do you reconcile those small government ideals with the fact that Alaska is one of the most highly subsidized states in the union?
I do affiliate with the Tea Party from time to time, but I wouldn't consider myself like an active member or activist of that particular group. As far as federal subsidies go, I really don't believe that they would be necessary if the state was allowed to develop its own resources and was less restricted by the federal government. ANWR, for example, if we were able to open ANWR, this would definitely create a lot more production coming down the Alaska pipeline.
Les Guerra, 30 seconds.
You know, I voted for expanded oil development, too. But, I mean, to go to Juneau and sit there and wait for the federal government to do something, I think, is a waste of time. I mean, you can try and prod the federal government. But these sound bites that you're going to cut foster care spending? Seriously, you're going to blame somebody who, at no fault of their own, has a tough circumstance, and you're just going to take money away from that system so they can fail in greater numbers? I mean, right now, 40% of foster youth already end up homeless at some point of their life. That was a statistic from about 3 years ago. I hope it's better today. But you can't blame people for lots in life that they haven't created themselves. I have voted against most capital budgets in the state. They have been too high.
Okay, well, now we're going to go to the candidate questions, and the candidates will be able to question one another. Mr. Eichenlaub, you have the first question. Mr. Garrow, you will have 45 seconds to respond, and then you'll have 15 seconds to comment on what you heard.
Thank you.
First question.
Mr. Guerra, how much money do you believe should be spent per student in the state of Alaska?
Well, it varies depending on where you live. We have a higher factor that we give to school districts with higher costs, rural costs. But I believe education funding should be at a level that helps us reduce class sizes, attract quality teachers and quality principals, and I believe it should be inflation-proof so the education dollar doesn't disappear every single year, which it has been the last few years. And I've had proposals to do that.
Mr. Eichenlaub, 15 seconds.
Yes, you disagreed with my desire to cut education spending. Alaska currently spends upward of $16,000 per student in the state of Alaska, which is far excess of what's done in the private sector. In the private sector, we have private schools that that charge anywhere between $6,000-$7,000 for tuition, and I just believe that the current levels are far too excessive. I believe any level over about 9,000.
We're going to have to leave it there. Les Gary, your question for your opponent.
Yeah. Chris, I've knocked on thousands of doors to learn and hear from constituents in this campaign. I've made it through roughly 90% of the district. I'm still trying to finish it. But no one I've spoken to has said they've heard from you at all. And the Policemen's Officers Association has said that you're not knocking on doors. So why have you not been knocking on doors to hear from people?
I'm a pretty busy private citizen. I'm not retired. I currently work a full-time job. I currently just had my first child born. I've currently had a lot of things going on. I've had deaths in the family, had to leave the state. I haven't been able to commit to knocking on doors in my community, and because of that, I don't believe it's fair to single out anyone.
Les Gary, 15-second comment on what you heard.
I've also lost my mother this year, but I think it's important to listen to people, the people you want to represent. I also go to community councils where you listen to the people that you represent, and I haven't seen you at any of those either. I think you can just learn a lot by listening.
Your second question, Mr. Gary.
Yeah. The governor and House Republicans are pushing an oil tax giveaway that gives the big three oil companies $2 billion in our tax revenue and lets them spend that money outside. I believe any tax break should require investment in Alaska. Would you agree with that?
No, I do not. I do not believe that the free market should be obligated in any way by some type of legal restraints tied to a tax cut.
You know, I voted for legislation that would increase tax credits for investment in Alaska, that would create jobs in Alaska, that would create more oil development in Alaska, but I think it's irresponsible to give the big three oil companies $2 billion of our revenue and tell them they can spend it in Iraq and Libya. That's no good for Alaska.
Mr. Eichenlaub, your second question for Mr. Ura.
Yes. Why are you so concerned with the with corporate free speech? I've seen many statements that you've given where you've been opposed to corporate-sponsored PACs that have been funding opposition to you, I guess. I haven't seen any of this money, but why are you so opposed to this?
Yeah, a new group actually just filed yesterday by the Republicans. It's funded by pharmaceutical industries, oil and gas companies, and it's all outside money. I believe when corporations are allowed to fund elections, they drown out the voice of ordinary citizens. Exxon, Conoco, and BP earned $70 billion in profits last year. When they can spend unlimited amounts on elections, that just drowns out the ability of somebody who doesn't have $70 billion to have an equal voice in government. If you believe that corporations should be able to buy elections, that's your position. It's not mine.
Mr. Eichenlaub, 15 seconds.
What do you see?
To respond.
Yes. I'm having a problem understanding free speech here. You don't think that they should have protected free speech the same as everybody else?
That'll have to be rhetorical for the moment.
Exactly.
Okay, Mr. Guerra, your third question here.
I believe everybody deserves opportunity. That's why I've worked very hard to reform our foster care system. Do you have any proposals to reform a system that sees too much harm and too many obstacles to success for these youth who are in a situation through no fault of their own?
For youth specifically, no. I have not targeted any plans for youth. Everybody that I've actually spoken with has never brought up that subject.
Okay. Mr. Guerra, 15 seconds.
Sure. On corporate free speech, corporations, they can do ads, but when they have the right to spend unlimited money on elections, I think that's a horror for the Alaska election system. I've spearheaded a lot of foster care reforms. I believe in uplifting people and creating opportunity
for
people.
We're going to have to leave it there for the time being. Mr. Eichenlaub, your final question for Les Gary, who will have 45 seconds.
What do you see as the role of government? I just want to get at Les Gary's political philosophy on why the government exists.
Well, it's to listen to people, to pursue the will of the people. It's to create opportunity for people. You can't guarantee success, but you can give people opportunity. That means college financial aid and job training aid for people who can't afford it. It means uplifting people. It means not blaming people for circumstances that they had no role in, like foster youth, which you have no proposals on and would cut, as far as I've heard, cut the budget for. So I think it's to create opportunity for people so they can succeed.
Mr. Eichenlaub, 15 seconds, finally.
Yeah, I just took notice that you didn't mention anything about protecting liberty or following the Constitution. I'm very passionate about constitutional government, and one of the things that I've never come across while researching this is that none of the founders have ever mentioning the role of the government to lift people up or to level the playing field.
We're going to have to leave it right there. Now we'll go to our reporters. Daisha Eaton with your first round, first question, the second round for our candidates.
This is for Mr. Guerra. In a resource-rich state like Alaska, why do we struggle so much with low test scores and high dropout rates?
Well, I mean, if you go Mr. Eichenlaub's way, which is cutting education funding, cutting funding to help uplift foster youth so that they continue to fail, I think that's why you have a lot of people in the legislature like that. Public education is the great equalizer. And on his point on liberty, I've voted for the strongest privacy laws that have been passed in the legislature since I've been there, and it's been bipartisan, so I'm not sure what he's talking about in terms of liberty.
Mr. Eichenlaub, 30 seconds.
Yes, I believe that the public education system is oversaturated with funding and is ineffective in its current structure. We need to introduce mechanisms of competition to help create and solve these types of problems.
Kyle Hopkins.
This question is for Mr. Eichenlaub. I'll follow up on something that you mentioned earlier. You talked a little bit about the cost of private schools versus public schools. Mm-hmm. Would you support amending the state constitution so that state money could be used for faith-based or just individual private schools?
Just as the previous question, this would be necessary in order to allow that to happen. Otherwise, state spending on private schools and religious institutions that offer those same services wouldn't be legal.
Les Garrett, 30 seconds.
Would you support that?
I do support that, yes.
Okay. Les Garrett, 30 seconds.
Well, you do believe in lots of government spending. You just want it to go to private schools. And the problem is if you change the Constitution to put public money into private schools, you're going to have two schools of legislators, those who want to fund private schools, those who want to fund public schools, and both are going to be underfunded. And I think that would be a disaster for the state educational system. I think you should have vibrant public schools, school choice, like we do with charter schools and homeschooling, but I'm not willing to undercut the public education system.
Thank you, Mr. Guerra. Let's return to Daisha Eaton.
And this is a question for Mr. Eichenlaub. What can the state do to provide more affordable housing here? There's a 2.6% vacancy rate for rentals currently, at least that's the last number, last time I checked. It's hard to find a place to live that you can afford if you're just a common working person. What do you think the state should be doing to make that easier for people?
I'm sorry, Deja, but I need to use this answer to rebut what my opponent just said. As far as education spending goes, the cost of public education is more than double the cost of private tuition. If the state can save money by sending people to more expensive private schools, which isn't the case, there's an overall savings in allowing that type of system of competition.
Okay, now can you answer my question about housing?
I currently have no plans. Okay. Affordable housing is something that has not come up as I've been talking.
Let's let Garrigan in here for 30 seconds.
If you'd knocked on doors in the district or gone to community councils, you'd hear that people can't afford their rent. AHFC has a first-time homebuyers program. That's good. There is federal money that we can leverage, federal money I guess you wouldn't want to accept based on your statements, that we can leverage to create mixed-income housing. Mixed-income housing works very well, and we just have a new project at Lusac Manor between A and C Street. And mixed-income housing lets people of different economic backgrounds mix together, and
Thank
I think
you,
that's
Mr.
very
good.
Let's
make sure that all the candidates get three questions. So, Kyle Hopkins, do you have a third question for Les Guerra?
Let me ask a gas line question. You guys have talked a little bit about oil taxes. My question is, do you think you'll see a gas line in Alaska in your lifetime? And if so, what's it going to take to make that happen?
Well, you can't just sit down and wait for one. We've done that for 20 years. I certainly support a gas line to Valdez, a big diameter gas line that produces cheap gas, that gets us gas, and then also lets us export the excess. But at some point, what's really going on is the oil companies are killing that project by saying they won't put gas into the pipeline, so nobody will build it. And if they're going to do that, then we have to use our nuclear option, which is to threaten them with the law, which says they have a duty to produce gas on leases that they hold, and they don't have a right to warehouse it. If it's economic to send gas to Asia, then the oil companies have to play.
Okay, Mr. Eichenlaub, 30 seconds.
Yes, I believe the free market should decide when this project is ready. And if this isn't an economical project to produce, there's no reason in moving forward. I'd also like to bring up the fact that my opponent is supporting renewable resource incentives from the government as well. And this would be in direct competition to that gas that would be sold in local markets with a all-Alaska state pipeline.
Okay, in this final question segment, the panelists will ask questions. You'll each have 30 seconds to respond, and we have a little extra time, so you should be prepared for a little extra questioning. Let's go to Dacia Eaton first, and we'll start with Mr. Eichenlaub, your question for him, and then Mr. Guerra.
Mr. Eichenlaub, what can the state do to provide more affordable health care and accessible health care?
One of the things that I've learned from talking with people is that health care problems are not necessarily exclusive in Alaska. In Alaska, we pay more for everything. I recently discovered from talking with somebody that they made arrangements with an insurance company to actually leave the state to receive health care. It was cheaper for them to receive health care outside of the state than it was inside of the state. That being the case, there's general economic problems that must be overcome before we can see a reduction in health care costs.
Les Guerra.
I voted in the past to let private individuals join into the state health care plan. I think a bigger pool of people would reduce the premiums for that system. The world is going to change with sort of Romney Care and Obamacare. They're both the same plan. I mean, the presidential candidates snipe at each other, but they're both the same exact plan. Romney's running away from it. But we're going to have to see what that does, because that's going to be the law of the land, or maybe it won't be. So we have to wait for that.
We're going to have to leave it there. Kyle Hopkins.
And this would be for
Mr. Eichenlaub first.
Mr. Eichenlaub. I asked about amending the Constitution to fund private schools. If there's a constitutional convention, if we revisit what should be in Alaska's constitution, another topic will be gay marriage. Would you support amending the constitution to legalize gay marriage in Alaska?
I think that this is something that all people are going to have to take into account for. As far as marriage goes, I believe that the reason that the state began regulating marriage in the first place was in the early 1900s, when the threat of mixed race couples arose, it was used as the way for the state to prevent those types of couples from marrying. I don't believe the state should have any role in saying who can and cannot be married.
Les Guerra.
Going back to the Constitutional Convention, I think that would be a disaster. That would open up the Constitution to extremists to do all sorts of stuff. It would open up the Constitution to mandate private schools the way Mr. Eichenlaub wants, and his statistics are wrong about the cost of public schools. He's factoring in the very high-cost rural public schools when he comes up with his statistics. And of course, it's more expensive to run a school in Kotzebue. I certainly would not discriminate against gay people. They're equal members of society.
Okay, let's go to our closing statements. Mr. Eichenlaub, 1 minute, sir.
Yes, like I said, I'm really conscious about a lot of the issues of liberty in this state, and federal overreach has just been, far too much to bear. We need to organize something in this state to prevent this from happening, and I'm hoping to represent you in Juneau to do this. Thank you.
Les Guerra, you have 1 minute.
Thank you, Mike. My interest is in standing up for your interests. Your interests over corporate interests. Your interests over special interests. I believe in strong businesses. I believe in fostering partnerships with businesses. But I don't believe that any business should be able to run this state. And that's been the problem in Alaska. I don't believe that any lobbyist should be able to have more power than a voter. I voted to make corporate donors reveal themselves when they hide behind fake campaign front groups so that we know who's contributed to these attack ads on TV. I've voted to reduce the amount of money wealthy donors can put into campaigns so your voice doesn't get drowned out by somebody else's money. My interest is in creating opportunity for all, regardless of whether you're born with privilege, regardless of whether you're born wealthy. I don't believe in a government that favors big wallets who want favors in Juneau. I'd rather represent you, create better schools, job opportunities, a good place for seniors to live, and to protect your rights to hunt, fish, and enjoy the outdoors. My name is Les Guerra, and I'd appreciate your vote.
Thank you, Mr. Eichenlaub and Mr. Guerra. This concludes this evening's running program. Tomorrow night, starting at 7, we will hear from the candidates for Senate District J and K, and also House Districts 19, 20, 21, and 22. We hope you will join us. Good evening.
Running is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated. Audio will be posted on our website at alaskapublic.org. John LaFournaise is the director, Pat Yak, producer, Josh Edge, associate producer, Scott Bruno, audio engineer. Running is hosted by Michael Carey. Panelists include Daisha Eaton of KSKA Anchorage, Kyle Hopkins of the Anchorage Daily News, and Grace Jang of KTVA. Camera operators are Philip Ginther, Candace Ferguson, Joe Jackson, Eric Judson, and Josh Edge. Lighting design by John LaFournaise and Scott Bruno. Production assistance provided by the League of Women Voters, Pat Redmond, Carol Dickinson, Kay Ladimpera, and Barbara Norrell. Engineering, Larry Anderson. Traffic coordinator, Kristen Dugan. In master control, Sean Fletcher. Set design and construction provided by KPB Architects and Neeser Construction. This is KSKA Anchorage FM 91.1.